My name is Stuart McCallum, and I'm a partner based in our Glasgow office. I head up RSM's UK's sector team for food and drink, and I'm also part of our UK manufacturing team. So first of all, just a very brief introduction to RSM to those who don't know us. We're a global tax and audit and a consultancy business, and our representation stretches across 120 countries and comprises of a team of around 48,000 people. Our focus is on middle market businesses, which tend to be family-run OMBs or corporates listed companies. We pride ourselves on our UK regional footprint, which allows us to focus on each local market. This allows us to work with many different companies and support them locally, nationally and internationally. You can see our UK footprint on this slide. It's testament to the strength of the sector and a growing awareness as to how important food and drink security is to the UK and how resilient and forward-looking you all are. I still believe the future is bright for the whole of the UK, as we have so many great products and companies in the food and drink space despite current market challenges. So this is our third webinar with Food and Drink Federation in 2022, but builds on a number we've co-hosted over the last 2 years. In discussion with Food and Drink Federation and taking into account what our clients are asking us about, we've covered topics such as innovation planning and around planning for fluctuating demand during COVID, and the most recent one being a forum on M&A activity in the food and drink sector. Now we're hoping for a bumper period for the food and drink sector over Christmas, be that via hospitality or retail. It's been too long since we last had a full-blown Christmas and New Year period that will not be being impacted by COVID restrictions. That said, undoubtedly, there are numerous challenges impacting the industry currently. So let me start with what we are seeing as trends in the market and from across some of our clients before I get on to why this forum on sustainability. So many clients across all sectors, but especially the food and drink, are experiencing rapid cost inflation, be that raw materials or labour or a combination of both. You then add in the energy crisis, which will have a large impact in this sector, given food and drink manufacturing is often so energy intensive. And to further add to the pot of challenges, we have a rapidly increasing interest rate environment. This is again something that the sector will have exposure to, given the access to debt that the sector has historically enjoyed. The industry is waiting for clarity on the government's plan, Re-Energy, post 1st of April 2023, and the closure of the Energy Bill Relief Scheme. Let's hope for some further clarity from government in the autumn statement later this week. And in the slightly longer term, large parts of the sector will be hoping for changes to migration policies to allow for flexibility for seasonal workers too. Nonetheless, many of our clients are focusing on the things they can control at a time when we have many material issues converging. Businesses we know are developing their access to key data to inform decision making, and we're definitely seeing a return to detailed cash flows for short, medium and long term periods, along with multiple scenario planning exercises taking place. The latest data demonstrates that consumers are beginning to tighten the purse strings, and another factor continues to be the limited workforce. These are incredibly difficult conditions in which to trade, and many of our clients are evaluating whether it's best to be at the premium end or the value end. What I do fear is for those caught in the middle in the next year or two. So taking all of the above into account, UK consumers are going to have to pay more for UK food and drink, and we're already seeing that coming through. UK food prices reached a 14-year high last month, with annual food prices rising 14.7%, with further increases likely. That said, opportunities do remain, with exports of UK food and drink at a new high for year-to-date exports since pre-COVID, with one of my favourite tipples, whisky, definitely leading the charge. So coming to thinking behind today's seminar, sustainability has to now be at the heart of every business's strategic thinking. It's fair to say that getting your sustainability strategy right or wrong could make or break you in the next few years. So for me, some of the areas I am discussing with food and drink businesses around sustainability are as follows. Plastics and packaging. How do you reduce your carbon footprint and use more recyclable materials? In Scotland, we are about to see the first deposit return scheme, which is being developed. This will add cost and complexity, but something needs to be done to reduce our reliance and recycle more. And of course, we're having many conversations with clients on new plastic packaging tax too, which we did a forum with Food and Drink Federation earlier this year on as well. Logistics and sustainable ingredients. Buying local and reformulating will be part of this. This also plays into the logistics aspects as well, via selling and buying more within local markets. Plant-based products is going one way at the moment, with consumer taste driving this and a growing awareness of some of the differences this can make to the environment. I don't think it is perfect, and aspects can and will be improved. but you could have a product, but could you have a product in this space? Food waste is a topical area with lots of manufacturers reducing as much as they can and helping the local communities. The industry can do more and it is a win-win. Energy, lots of clients looking at CapEx solutions to bring more solar or renewable energy sources on stream. Challenge with that is getting people to actually install them, given the demand regards the cost of energy at the moment. So let's move on to the main event. I will pass over to Rich and Dan shortly, but let me introduce them both to you all. Rich Halls, our UK Head of Sustainability. He's worked both internationally and in the UK with some of the world's largest, most complex businesses and respected brands. And now on to Dan, who's a partner at Gowling WLG, which is a friend of ours at RSM. Gowling WLG is an international legal firm with roots in both the UK and Canada. We share a similar market profile and client profile, with both of us having a focus on the food and drink sector in the UK and beyond. Dan heads up the UK advertising law team and is a member of Gowling's food and drink sector team as well. Dan helps clients push creative boundaries with their advertising while managing legal and reputational risk. He is an expert in environmental claims and advertising, having advised on some of the ASA's most recent decisions. So we've got a great double act to unleash on you all now, and a hybrid from both RSM and Gowling WLG, which is going to be informative and hopefully thought-provoking. But just before we launch into the webinar, Adam, can you put up the quick poll questions, please? Thank you. Numbers coming up fine. Just give it another couple of seconds. 70% voted, getting there. I think that's us just about there. And that's interesting. We're just about a 50-50 split in that some of you have a sustainability strategy in place. So lots of people here who are aware of it, but equally quite a lot who maybe aren't. Can we do the second poll question, Adam? About 60% at the moment. So give it another minute or two, but it's looking quite conclusive. Yeah, so that says up to about 75% voted, and it's fair to say that there's an overwhelming, like 95% of people are saying that you feel that your sustainability strategy will drive brand value. So some interesting, I think, poll results. So let's crack on with the webinar. I'll pass over to Rich in the first instance.
Rich Hall, I'm Head of Sustainability at RSM and one of the partners in the ESG consulting practice. I've been involved in sustainability and ESG for over 20 years now. And in that time, I've worked extensively with the food supply chain and UK supermarkets and things like that. So this is a subject that I've been around for some time and understand some of the challenges. So I suppose the first thing to sort of reflect on, and it sort of hits and strikes a chord with what's just being said, and you know, I still like to think of myself as sustainability. I still talk to heads of sustainability, but it is worth noting that there's a sort of blend and a move towards environmental, social and governance, and I guess what's driven that, and some of it is without doubt the fact that the financial institutions have got more heavily involved in pushing sustainability, not just within their own operations, but within their supply chain. And in doing that, have kind of understood that it certainly does create a more resilient organization if you use sustainability well, and it does drive and protect brand value and things like that. So there's been this emergence, particularly over the last sort of 24 to 36 months, where ESG has become more, not more prominent than sustainability, but slightly more all-encompassing, but still contains a lot of the things that we talk about and have been talking about from sustainability perspective for many years. The nature of the ask remains the same. It's still quite a complex agenda. There's often interlinking risks and opportunities that you need to sort of take account for, and there are key challenges for leadership between the balance of risk, reward and reputation. And what's key and what we're actually seeing now is that we're starting to see winners and losers, not just at an industrial level, but certainly at an organisational level. So when we're sort of talking about it, a key focus, particularly for the food and drink sector, has been that sort of blend of the environmental and the social side, where we're talking about natural world. Stuart's already sort of talked about waste and recycling and things like that, but it's much more than that. So if we sort of think of sustainability in the food and drink sector, it includes things like food provenance, sort of sustainability credentials of your sourcing. We're seeing an increase within those standards around the loss of biodiversity, et cetera, et cetera. You'll probably be, depending on what food you're producing, you'll be wrestling with chain of custody standards, whether that's your upstream supply chain, but also your downstream product as well. And Stuart's mentioned waste, and waste at all its levels is a real focus at the moment. And, you know, whether that's driving that out upstream within the operational side, or some kind of food donations, because, you know, those products are coming to the end of their sort of shelf life or what it might be. And from an operational side as well, on the sustainability aspects, you know, it's increasingly, Stuart's mentioned that, what's the product formulation? We're starting to see more plant-based products that can bring in a food fuel and now an offset debate in the UK, as we've seen some of the sort of farmland being turned into plantations for offsets for trees and things like that. So there's always these debates within the food, but there's a bit of a lack of the nutrition standards at the moment as well, but certainly consumer focus on the nutrition standards. But, you know, we've not got the government targets that we had in 2020 around sugar and salt, which a lot of people have obviously fulfilled their obligations. So we're waiting to see what's coming out around that. There's a huge issue at the moment around products, and I'm not going to talk hugely about that because that's the sort of purpose of where Dan is. But this, you know, what is a sustainable product? What is a green product? How do you prove that is key? And a lot of investors and stakeholders are asking questions about that. So I'm looking forward to Dan's slot on that. And then it's, you know, when we're talking about some of the things I've just run through, and, you know, that upstream sourcing, own operations, what's happening within energy costs, there's a real mix at the moment of sort of balancing the sustainability standards that you've got, cost, and then we've got to be absolutely honest, if it's international supply chains, securing supply at all, because, you know, it's a competitive market. And if we're setting Western standards extremely highly, and other major markets aren't necessarily setting them at the same levels, then there is supply choice. And, you know, that's just another one of those complex things that we're having to deal with. So a couple of sort of points to think about. So one of the key areas we're seeing, and as I said at the outset, I've been involved in sustainability for 20 years, and despite the challenges that we're seeing in the economic climate at the moment and what we've seen over the last 2 years with COVID, it's never been higher on the agenda. I am industry agnostic, but I do work a lot within the food and drink sector, as we've already discussed. This is a top three, four, five issue, mainly three, for major organisations, all the way through to SMEs and potentially startups that are looking to sort of generate revenues and get resonance in brand values around this. So the sort of key things that we've seen, huge increase in access to finance, or issues to access to finance. So, you know, this is where the sustainability linked loans are coming into play, with a lower rate, lower interest rate, potentially longer terms as well, so beneficial terms. But in doing that, you've got some level of sustainability metrics that you're going to have to meet. Typically, that's some kind of carbon reduction, something around health and safety, and it could be waste, or it could be product provenance, nutrition, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we're seeing a huge increase in those. But there's also a huge increase in positive and negative screening that you might be completely aware of if you're looking for finance, or you were looking for private equity investment, for instance. So that's a real key area. And that's had a knock-on effect, and the insurance industry is sort of looking at that now as well. We've seen increasing and emerging regulation, often at pace and often unexpected. So, you know, we've not closed down on COP27 yet, but at COP26 we saw a number of different things that came out around legislation. Now, there wasn't anything specifically for the food and drink sector, but if we looked at other sectors, we saw net carbon zero housing standards come in. We saw the move from petrol and diesel car sales being pulled forward from 2035 to 2030. So we've seen a lot of legislation that comes. It's often at pace, and the supply chains aren't necessarily ready for it. So being aware of what's coming is you know, useful to do some horizon scanning, and then often, you know, we might see something that comes out that we have to readjust to. Irrespective of where you sit within the supply chain, you are going to see supply chain pressure. Now, if you're in a supermarket supply chain or a big brand, a hotel, whoever it might be, they are all going to start asking for, and you know, you will have them in your technical specifications and technical visits anyway, but they are starting to increase their standards. They're starting to ask for contributions to their own carbon targets and things like that. So, you know, access to finance is a really big driver. Supply chain pressure is another really big driver, whereby people are direct engagement and perhaps not just reliant on some of the questionnaires and forms of the past. Consumer decision making and preferences, 50% of the Wales population is under 30, and they are more attuned to you know, sustainable products and more socially acceptable products, et cetera, et cetera. So it's coming. Again, Stuart mentioned things like plant-based products, and, you know, wherever you look, there is this call for responsible products and more responsible products. So I expect that trend to continue. Increased reporting, disclosure and dissemination. So mainly for the larger companies, but there's a huge amount of reporting that's come through. There are some real game changers, not on the horizon now, but actually joining us, and things like Task Force for Climate-Related Disclosures that ask organisations for the first time, not just to report on their operations, but highlight strategically how climate change is going to impact them, how they've addressed that, how they've understood the risks, and what they're going to do to maintain that brand value again. So that's going to be for the larger organisation, that's hitting now. But whilst they're looking at that, if you're in the supply chain, expect them at some point to engage and ask. And, you know, we'll see that reporting reduced down in terms of turnover levels at some point anyway. Product responsibility is a big one. There's a lot of focus at that at the moment. You know, what are you making from a food perspective? What's in it? What's its provenance? You know, how are you marketing it again? So what Dan's going to talk about next. And then all of this, all of these sort of key things are around at a time where there is rising and sustained media interest. Despite everything else that's going on in the world at the moment, we are still seeing a huge amount of focus on sustainability. You know, Greta Thunberg was Times Person of the Year in 2020, et cetera, et cetera. And we're seeing new influencers sort of coming to the market all the time. But we're also seeing that huge increase in interest from the finances. And sort of final point for many organisations, and, you know, in a sector that is very much constrained at the moment by availability of staff in certain sectors, you know, this is important to staff. You know, staff attractiveness. People want to work for organisations that seem to be doing good things. And, you know, there is an acceptance that firms still need to make money, et cetera, et cetera. But there is an increase in things like B Corp and of the standards where people expect the firm to do the right thing by society and gain that license to operate as well. So those are the sorts of key things we expect to see within the sort of next 12 to 36 months. What's the opportunity? You know, if you and 50% of you have got sustainability strategies, which is good. You know, if they're not new, it's probably worth a quick look back to check that, you know, they're still in the sort of today's world, you know, and everything that's out there at the moment, having a quick refresh, checking that they're still doing the purpose, you know, and also when you set a strategy, are you meeting its aims? You know, how did you get the plans in place? So you know, what we're seeing around this is the ability to target new markets and new customers. So, you know, if you can get your product portfolio right and you've done your stakeholder engagement, you know, there are new markets and new customers out there. But it's really good for enhancing existing customer relations. So if you are in the supply chain of a supermarket or a larger blue chip organization, for instance, they haven't got all the answers to this themselves. So they are looking for solutions and they are looking for people to have partnerships. And if you can sort of provide them with some of the answers that they need or just the information that they need and you're forthcoming with that, it makes you a bit stickier. I'm not saying ultimately you will be able to get increased revenues from it, particularly in constrained times. But it just gives you that differentiator potentially from a competitor, whereby you've enhanced the relationship beyond purely commercial values. I've mentioned the talent attractiveness, and if you're doing this and you're getting your message out into the local communities and you're doing that sort of stakeholder engagement with the local communities, really, really handy for organisations to know that you're there, that you're doing the right things, and potentially open that talent door and making sure the skill set's there. And then particularly important, it really can create operational and cost efficiencies. So, you know, waste in all forms is, as it says, it's wasteful. If you can get the right focus on waste reduction, whether that's energy, whether that's driving food waste out at an operational level, might be donations downstream if it's shelf life, there are cost efficiencies to doing that. And, you know, resource efficiency was a thing 20 years ago. It's still a thing now. And on top of resource efficiency, you know, Stuart mentioned, you know, issues about energy costs, et cetera, et cetera. There's a real issue here about energy security potentially looming as well. So, you know, if you've got the ability to invest in some of the greener technologies at the moment, it's not just sort of reducing that escalating cost, it's actually making sure you've got some kind of security of supply there as well. So some sort of key things there. And then the sort of longer term is, you know, creating value between yourself and the stakeholders and enhancing that license to operate in local and global communities. It's really important, but some of that's around the communication and the engagement that you do in the first place. Anytime you look at sustainability and you talk to your employees at all levels through the organisation, you will start to see some innovation. And, you know, it can be a difficult thing to control. There could be lots of ideas that aren't ready for the, you know, and, you know, you're not ready for yet. And particularly in, you know, the current climate, you've got to stay focused. But it's a great way of engaging employees, getting that innovation, get some of the sort of ideas around what is a complex area and potentially seeing things from a different angle that you might not see, you know, if you're a senior leader in a firm and a manager and wrestling with a sort of portfolio of lots of different things that you're looking after. Another really major one, and probably one of the most major ones for me at the moment, is it's addressing that investor on consumer expectations and, you know, just being transparent about what you're doing, why it's important to you, and being the experts in the room on your own business and sustainability is really important and extremely compelling, irrespective of the kind of voluntary framework you may or may not have signed up to. There tends to be a reliance to rely on frameworks. They certainly have their place. They're very good when, you know, enacted properly, but you can never take away from an organisation that genuinely understands the challenges itself and can speak with clarity on that. So that's another sort of area. If you are speaking to investors or having, you know, direct engagement with consumers. And then understanding the wider stakeholder concerns, that's really useful to just keep the business abreast of economic and other challenges. You know, understanding where the stakeholders are mapped, what the concerns are, and just keeping your business as relevant and resonant, and in particular underpinning that brand value that we sort of talked about earlier. But there's some of the key challenges there. What are the key things we need to consider? I've mentioned stakeholder engagement and understanding a lot. That's absolutely key, particularly to your main ones. Materiality, don't try and do everything. Do, you know, pick the few things that you can do really, really well and focus on those. You know, that's still key. If something's not working for you, have a critical review and look to see what you can do. Supply chain prerogative, there's some really big issues here. You've got to understand your own influence. Some of this stuff you're going to have to take a view and say, we have to do this at an industry level. You know, there are some of the largest brands in the world have made some, you know, back 20 years ago, I was working with some very large brands of 10, 5 years ago, and they were making promises and pledges that were very difficult to keep, you know. So you understand your own influence, work with others, work within the industry if needs be to sort of move things along, but really target down to what you need to do. Define your business case, really understand the return on investment and why you're doing those different strands. And if you can't, there might be some things that you think it just feels like a good thing to do. There's nothing wrong with that, but you do need to make sure that there is a balance of it just feels like a good thing to do, and we genuinely understand the business case for doing it. And then the rest is really, you know, plan, monitor, check you've got the resource, check that the people have got the right engagement and training requirements. And if you can do all of that and are mindful of the reporting requirements that are wanted from you, both from a legislative perspective, but also from a consumer and customer perspective, you should be able to sort of keep tracks on what would be a sensible strategy. So those are the sort of key issues for me in sort of seeing where some of the strategies have gone awry or perhaps haven't had the impact that they, you know, people expected from the outset. So that's it from me for now, Stuart.
Thanks, Rich. And I'll pass over to Dan.
So once you have a sustainability strategy in place and are making progress against your sustainability goals, then your marketing and communications teams will, of course, quite rightly, want to promote those achievements. And we've seen an explosion in the amount of green claims in advertising over the past few years, including during the pandemic period. And that demonstrates just how important environmental performance has become as a means of attracting and engaging with consumers and differentiating products from the competition. So the vast majority of the advertising review and advertising complaints work I've seen over the past 12 months has included some kind of sustainability or environmental angle, from packaging innovation and plastic reduction. So for example, I've been working with Carlsberg on the removal of plastic rings from 4 packs of beer, through to the use of electric vehicles in the supply chain, and quite widespread this one, the promotion of plant-based alternatives. The reason why I, as an advertising lawyer, have been spending so much time on these reviews and complaints is that the regulators are also cracking down on green claims where they tip over into greenwash. So around the time of COP26 last year, we saw the Competition and Markets Authority introduce the Green Claims Code. And that's a raft of guidance and examples as to what the Competition and Markets Authority considers to be good and bad practice in the making of environmental claims. And at the same time, they said that they stood ready to carry out a full review of misleading green claims in the market as from the beginning of this year. So the issuing of that Green Claims Code really heralds a crackdown by the regulators on greenwash. And sure enough, in July this year, we saw the Competition and Markets Authority launch an investigation into 3 fashion brands to scrutinise their green claims. So they're starting with the fashion sector. I have no doubt that they will move on to other sectors and that food and beverage will be one of those. Let's just take a quick look at what the Competition and Markets Authority is investigating in the fashion sector, because I think there are learning points for us here too. So firstly, the use of broad and vague language to describe a fashion collection. So responsible edit, ready for the future. And certainly you can see that across all sectors, it's tempting to bracket products with varying degrees of environmental performance under headings such as sustainable options. So, you know, this is a live issue. Then in the fashion sector, the CMA has identified a low bar for inclusion in those collections. So perhaps only 20% recycled content. And again, that could be an issue in other sectors. So you've got your broad sustainable options heading, and then you've got perhaps products with a specific environmental benefit attached, but perhaps not environmentally beneficial across their whole life cycle. They've called out missing information. So misleading, what they consider to be misleading omissions. So you've got your fashion fabric with 20% recycled content. What's the rest of it made from? And what is the environmental impact on that? And then also a lack of clarity on whether some kind of environmental accreditation applies to particular products or the business more widely. So there's a temptation to take a specific benefit of a specific product, but paint a broader picture about all of your products. Just a quick example here of how far the regulators might have to go in the fashion space. So you'll see there, Boohoo by Kourtney Kardashian Barker, a collaboration to discover more about sustainability. I'll leave you to ponder who's got more to discover there, the fast fashion brand or the private jet owning mega celebrity. So what's in the Green Claims Code? Well, we've got some key principles in there. And if you have any familiarity at all with the way advertising is regulated in the UK generally, these should not be that surprising to you. So the claims you make about your products should be truthful and accurate. They should be clear and unambiguous. They should not omit or hide material information. They should only make fair and meaningful comparisons. So this comes up quite a lot. We'll see vague references to a product being greener or more sustainable. Greener than what? More sustainable than what? On what basis is it greener? So fair and meaningful comparisons would provide more specifics, more detail. This one's worth a mention. Consider the full life cycle of the product. So the regulatory push is very much to look at products on a complete life cycle basis and to consider their environmental performance across the whole life cycle. That doesn't necessarily prevent you from making claims about a specific part of the life cycle, but it must be a part of the life cycle that is meaningful to consumers, and you must be very clear in your advertising that you're only talking about that specific part of the life cycle. So for example, in the food and drink sector, we might talk about environmental performance from farm, from grower to grocer. We might exclude from that use by the customer and disposal at end of life. But we need to be very clear as to how we structure that claim. And then, as always, with objective claims in marketing, they need to be fully substantiated with evidence. And that might be a complete life cycle analysis of the environmental performance of the product provided by independent consultants. But the number one issue that I'm coming across is very broad claims to be good for the planet, good for the earth, to be sustainable, absolute claims to be sustainable, no qualification attached. Or similarly, vague claims to be kinder to the planet or to be greener. Now, those are very risky claims, and the regulators are looking at those on the basis that a product which is attached to that kind of claim, you must be able to show that it has no negative impact on the planet whatsoever across its whole life cycle. And that is a very difficult hurdle to get over. So the Green Claims Code includes a lot of examples of what it considers to be potentially problematic environmental claims. So giving an exaggerated impression, and for that we would take a holistic view of the advertising or the communications materials concerned. So we would look at not just the headline, but we'd look at the secondary copy. We'd look at the imagery you're using. We'd look at all of the elements of the ad together, including the small print, and we would consider what impression that gives to the average consumer. And I see a whole load of advertising these days which features images of rainforests, very green images of leaves, of fields of wheat. Now, that's not necessarily problematic, but it will be a factor in considering how strong the environmental impression being, the implied environmental claims being given by that ad are. And we'll come on to an example of that a little later. Cherry picking positive aspects and ignoring negative aspects, or as we used to call that, advertising. So it's the way marketing's always been done. You've never felt obliged in your marketing to call out the negatives, but the regulators here are essentially asking for something more than you would usually do with your advertising, more of a fairer, transparent, more holistic view of your product's environmental performance. Carbon neutral claims, and we have new guidance from the Advertising Standards Authority on this as well. Do they clarify whether the claim is based only on reduction, or do they make it clear that offsets are also being used to deliver that net carbon zero performance? The Advertising Standards Authority has done some research around this, and contrary to what most of us might expect, they have found that most consumers looking at carbon zero claims consider that to be based on reduction only. So we need to err on the side of explaining more to the consumer where we're making carbon zero claims. Not comparing like with like, not making the basis for comparison fair and clear. I've talked a little about that. Focusing on minor points unlikely to be significant in terms of a product's overall impact across its life cycle. So it may be that the label on your product is printed using a greener alternative ink. Now, that might be something that you can point out in your marketing, or it might not be. You need to look at it in the context of the environmental performance of the product as a whole. Is that essentially a drop in the ocean compared to the environmental negatives attached to the rest of the product? If so, making that claim may be problematic. Making unsubstantiated claims, so as I've said, you need an evidence base to support the environmental claims that you're making. And this last one is worth noting. So talking about future goals, where the business does not have a clear and verifiable strategy to deliver them. Now, time was when we were looking at these kind of claims, and indeed in other areas, where a business could not say absolutely that it did something, we would often fall back on saying, we're on a journey to doing it. It's our ambition to deliver this. Now, that is still potentially problematic in this particular space of environmental claims. So where you are making those kind of journey, aspirational claims, claims about future goals, you need to have a documented strategy to deliver those goals, and it needs to be verifiable, and you need to be making progress against those goals and not overclaiming. Environmental claims is also a hot topic for the Advertising Standards Authority. That's for those of you who don't know, that's the administrator of the UK's self-regulatory system of advertising standards. They're conducting various research projects in this area, and they are also pursuing reams of complaints against businesses who are considered to have engaged in greenwash. Some of those complaints, or many of those complaints, are coming from consumers, from campaigning groups, from persons interested in defending the status quo. So some of those complaints are coming from farming industry groups, for example, and also from competitors. So just taking a look through a few of the complaints that have come up before the Advertising Standards Authority, because they are quite instructive. So first one of these is Alpro, and you'll see the ad there. It was an ad on the side of buses. Next stop, your recipe to a healthier planet. And you've got three Alpro products, and you've got good for the planet, good for you. Now, there was a complaint to the Advertising Standards Authority. It's centered on good for the planet. Are these kind of milk alternatives, dairy alternatives, good for the planet? That's an absolute claim. Alpro sought to argue that what they were saying was that these products are better for the planet than the dairy alternative. But the Advertising Standards Authority rejected that line of reasoning and said, no, that's not what you're saying. You're saying they are good for the planet per se. And to substantiate a claim as broad and vague as that, you need to be able to show across their whole life cycle that they do not have any negative environmental impact. And of course, that wasn't the claim that Alpro was intending to make, so it did not have sufficient evidence to back that up. Pepsi, so Lipton, This is a recycling claim. So you can see it there, deliciously refreshing, 100% recycled. We've had a series of complaints about claims like this before the Advertising Standards Authority. And the Advertising Standards Authority has looked at them and said, well, actually, is this product 100% recycled? In this case, it was not, because the label and the cap could not be recycled. There is very small print saying that in this particular ad, but the ASA considered that was not sufficiently prominent. So they considered this claim to be misleading. So moving on to innocent drinks. So this was a video ad, and where we started with, what we started with was a kind of grey future world where everybody was eating only beige food and sort of ruled by corporate suited executives, and the planet was heading for disaster. At which point along comes a singing otter and says, "What, basically, what are you doing?" and introduces some optimism and environmental action. And we switch over to a brightly coloured world full of green trees and fields with people drinking innocent smoothies. Now, this is important because the Advertising Standards Authority looked at the impression that this video gave as a whole. And what they said was, the impression you give is that innocent smoothies have no environmental impact across their life cycle. They are part of this bright green future world that you are presenting. And actually, despite the fact that innocent drinks have a number of environmental initiatives, of decent environmental initiatives in place, they are still using plastic packaging, for example. So there are still negative environmental impacts, and therefore they did not have the evidence in place to substantiate the overall impression given by this particular ad. So this one is Oatly. Oatly generates 73% less CO2 equivalent versus milk calculated from grower to grocer. Now, this was backed up by a life cycle analysis, which did indeed show this benefit. Unfortunately, it only showed it for the Oatly Barista product versus whole milk. And the Advertising Standards Authority said, you have not made the products which are the subject of this comparison clear. It is not true for example, other Oatly products versus semi-skimmed milk. Now, Oatly could show a benefit on those other comparisons, but it couldn't show a 73% less carbon dioxide equivalent emissions benefit. And therefore, the Advertising Standards Authority ruled against this ad too. So what we can see from that is they're taking a very harsh, very rigorous line and allowing very little flexibility. You need to be spot on with your claims in this space. Finishing up with two from the big supermarkets. So firstly, Tesco. Now, the Advertising Standards Authority accepts that there are environmental benefits in switching to a more plant-based diet in general terms. And that's what Tesco were aiming for here. A little swap is good for your pocket and even better for the planet. But they had placed it in the context of their own Plant Chef products. And so when the Advertising Standards Authority looked at this, they said, no, this isn't a general claim about the benefits of a more plant-based diet versus a meat-based diet. This is a claim specifically about your Plant Chef range. And Tesco did not have the specific life cycle analysis comparing, let's say, their Plant Chef burger with a meat alternative. So again, the ruling, the complaint was upheld. Contrast that with Sainsbury's. Now here, Sainsbury's had a TV ad and it said, people of Earth, if trying to eat better feels too hard, try your halfest. The ad showed meals being cooked while the voiceover continued. We'll mix half lentils into half mince, half chickpeas will meet half chicken, and half beans will meet half beef. A chop here, a change there, and will help our health and planet. And the Advertising Standards Authority did not uphold the complaint against this one because they considered the ads would be considered as promoting the general benefits to the environment of reducing meat protein in substitution for plant protein. And they considered that, those general benefits, to be substantiated. So, quickly to sum up, following that last ASA adjudication, what do you need to do in this space? Well, be specific, avoid generally worded claims. You need in your marketing to reflect where you are, not where you would like to be. You have to start with a sustainable product or at least a more sustainable product. Ensure you have robust substantiation in place and you're not overclaiming versus that substantiation. Consider the full life cycle. Ensure your aspirational claims, your journey claims, are grounded in reality and that you have concrete, measurable plans in place. And seek advice. There's a lot of major businesses tripping up on this, and you don't want what should be a very positive story about what you're doing to help the environment to turn into very negative allegations of greenwash.
Thank you very much, Dan and Rich. That was really informative. I think the fact that we had a 50-50 that people are looking at a sustainability strategy is good. I think what's clear, Dan, is that you know the impact this will have on brands, on your future value is super important. How you advertise that and position that is vital. Some really interesting kind of examples there as well, and I think we had one comment that Oatly and Innocent have been highlighted as you later in the slides, but I think it's going to be more coming in. I think the food and drink sector, given all of the aspects that are clearly positive for it, but you have to just make sure you do that as correctly as you humanly can.